Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. Today, I have a special interview for you with Mr. Shadi Kalul. This interview has been cut from November's Israel Daily News Roundtable. Our engaged listeners join us once per month for an exclusive Zoom call with impactful Israelis who are making a difference in the Holy Land and around the world. You can sign up for this at patreon.com/ShannaFold. This is a special exclusive experience for our most engaged listeners who are with us paying attention to what's going on in Israel. And for those of you who have questioning minds, it's open to anyone who would like to sign up on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes. At the end of the talk that we have, our listeners get a chance to ask our speakers questions. This has been going very well so far. We went for an hour and 20 minutes during our roundtable last month, but I've cut this interview down to fit into less than an hour. Today, we feature Shadi Kalul. He is an Aramean Israeli. He's committing to preserving and strengthening the Aramaic Christian tradition in Israel, where his family has resided since 1580. Until 2015, Aramean Christians were not recognized as a special population group in Israel, and he worked to get his community listed as their true heritage on all Israeli identification and in the civil registry. The Aramean Christians consider themselves as brothers of the Jewish people. Shadi is an advocate for Israel, for his community, and for Arameans in Lebanon as well. He knows the deep history of how the Jews and Christians have helped one another to fend off pogroms and attacks from hostile populations throughout the centuries. Shadi is the founder and president of the Israel Christian Aramaic Association, and he's working to restore the language, identity, and classification of his people in the state of Israel. He explains that because his community speaks Arabic, many have swept them into the category of Arab, and that this erases the true identity of his Maronite Christian community. Shadi works with all kinds of youth in order to get them exposed to the many demographics in the state of Israel, and also encourages young people to join the IDF, even though the ones that he works with are not necessarily required to do so. Shadi served in the IDF. He is going to tell us all about it, and he also speaks very loudly about why it's important for Israel to take this opportunity to eliminate Hamas and Hezbollah for the success and future of Israel so that it does not become just like Lebanon. You'll understand why through this interview. And thank you so much, Shadi, for being with us and for joining our call. Again, I just want to welcome you. You are an advocate. You are an activist. You toe the line between Christians, Jews, and Muslims. And I think that the work that you're doing to bring people together, especially at this time, is so important. And I also love that your identity has so many words. You are an Aramaic Maronite Christian from the north of Israel, and your family has been in this region since, if I'm not wrong, 1580. I believe that's what you told me on our
phone call. That's good. You remember well.
I thought it was just so absolutely impressive.
Yeah.
First of all, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about your work with young people that you do, and tell us a little bit about the work that you do and what you hope, what the change that you hope to create in our society, so that we could start there.
Okay. Thank you, Shanna, for hosting me again in your podcast and with your group. And I appreciate also the listeners and that participating with us here. And I would like to introduce myself and start by adding one very important, actually, identity, which is I am Israeli. So I born and raised as Israeli. I am since Israel was established and created in 1948, the independence of Israel, our family became Israeli citizens, and we also have and carry this identity. So, and I'm proud of it. So let me introduce who am I as a little bit deeper. I am a Christian, Israeli, Aramaic, Maronite citizen. I live in Upper Galilee in a town called Jish. We are originally from Kfar Bar'am. It's a nearby town, which was a pure Maronite town. And we live in this region not only from 1580, that's true, my family in this Kfar Bar'am is since 1580. But the Syriac Aramaic Maronite people were actually in this region as Aramaic people at least 6,000 years ago. The Aramaic people were actually the fathers and mothers of the Israelites. Let's not forget that Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Leah, Rachel, Rebekah, all came from Aram, Naharaim, from Aramaic kingdom, that is today what we call the region between the Iraq and Syria borders, the two rivers, that's what it is, the Euphrates and the Tigris River. And this region actually was inhabited by Aramaic people, and that's why the Jews in Passover say a wandering Aramaean my father was, went down to Egypt and become to a great and powerful nation. This is to remind the Jews who are their origins and to remind the Israelites who are their origins and where they come from. Now we know that the Jews has Aramaic heritage, and a lot of their language has still in the prayers books still in Aramaic. Now, not only that, we also came from those Aramaic people, because some of them who didn't follow the faith of one God of monotheism and kept being pagans in this region followed the faith of one God when Jesus, the Messiah, appears from the Jewish people and here in the Galilee. So we were the first followers of Jesus, the Messiah, in this land. And we become together with the ancient Jewish community here and our people speaking the same language and sharing same roots, actually, and origins. We become called Messianics in Aramaic language, Mshihoye, we are called in Aramaic. And in Arabic language, we are translating this word to Masihi, means Messianic. And in Hebrew, it's Mishichi. Now, since then, many churches were founded. One of them is our church that was founded by monk or priest that lived in Antioch, and Antioch Church is the church that was founded by Saint Peter, which was one of the apostles of Jesus. And as a founder of that church, those Aramaic speaking people who followed this church, we are the descendants of them. And we still actually carry this heritage since then. And our church, followed by this priest that was his name Marun, Saint Marun, was called a Maronite church, but the official large name is the Syriac Maronite Church of Antioch. And when we say Syriac, we are talking about Aramaic Syriac language and identity. That's who we are. And we kept inhabiting this region before Christianity and since Judaism was here. And because we at the end share those common origins and roots. And until today, under the name of a Maronite Syriac Aramaic Church of Antioch, or under what you call Israeli Christians today here in Israel, or Lebanese Christians, or Syriac or Syrian Christians, or Iraqi Christians. This is origins of our people as a Aramean nation, not Armenian, don't confuse with Armenian, but Aramean, which is Aramaic, and that's why the language is called Aramaic. And since then, we faced, in short, I would say, persecution and oppression and genocide since the Islamic conquest to the Middle East in the 7th century. We faced this annihilation. Many left the region. Many were slaughtered, facing genocide by Islamic forces who invaded our lands in Lebanon, in Syria, in Israel, in Galilee, where I live today, and in Iraq. And we know that many people actually didn't manage to keep their faith and become Muslims, and those actually today are called Arabs. So this is where some of the Arab people in Israel, actually, that called Arab, we know that they were once our brothers and sisters, maybe Jews speaking Aramaic language, and maybe Christians speaking Aramaic language, and now they are following Islamic religion and thinking themselves as Arabs. And they think that they are our enemies, unfortunately, instead of knowing that they are our brothers and sisters, and we need to actually coexist with each other and help each other for a better future. So this is actually how the problems in Middle East started. And I'm talking here in a macro, which is macro Middle East, not only Israel, but if we go to the micro, which is Israel, this situation did not stop since the 7th century. And it shows that the Jews that were living here together with those Aramaic Christians who spoke Aramaic, both of them in this land, were occupied by the Arab Islamic invaders from what we call the Arab Peninsula. And problems started in the Middle East and never stopped. And when the Jews were able to return back to their homeland after expelling them before in the Byzantine maybe era, they left maybe in the Roman era, and later on also in the Arab era, they made it and joined the other ones who stayed here, and they formed the State of Israel. So if someone comes now and tell me that Jews are not originated from here, then I laugh, because I know the Jews where they originated. They didn't originate in Europe. They didn't originate in Africa, neither in the United States. They are originated in Israel. It's the same thing. We, as a Maronite Christian Aramaic people, are originated from this land, from the fertile crescent, and in Lebanon specifically as Maronites. And when you say a Maronite Christian, means Lebanon. You cannot divide between Maronite and Lebanon. And without maybe Maronites, you have no Lebanon. So because they were the founders of Lebanon, and without Jews, you have no Israel, because they are the founders of Israel. And if we don't have these two people, which were originated from same Aramaic heritage, we would have here another failure Arabic state. And look about it. Lebanon, when it was founded by the Maronites in 1920 until 1975, when the civil war started, by invading by Palestinians and Arab Islamic War joining them, invading Lebanon and start fighting the Maronites and Christians and massacring them and slaughtering them and killing them and raping women and taking their lands in South Lebanon. Lebanon become failure country today since Taif agreement, which ended the war of 1975 to 1990 and gave the responsibility of managing the country from the Maronite Christian original people who founded Lebanon, switching the power to the Islamic parts of Lebanon, which is Shia Muslim of Hezbollah, led by Iran, and occupying Lebanon today. Actually, we see it, in fact. And the Sunni Muslims who failed to manage this country, and this country under political Islam become failure. That's what you see in Lebanon, instead of seeing Lebanon, Switzerland of the Middle East. Why? Because other population, other than Maronites, are loyal to outside forces, and I call it maybe bigger powers, superpowers, means Iran from one side, the Shia Islamic State, and for the Saudi Arabia and other Arab forces, who the Muslim Sunnis are loyal to those ones, and they care less about Lebanon and being Lebanese. They prefer being Arabs or being Muslims, and less loyalty to the Lebanese identity, which was made up and trying to be taught to them by the Maronite Christians in order to make them a positive citizens in the new state that was formed. And actually, this was not successful experience, unfortunately. So how this remind us about Israel now situation? It's the same process. And they, the Jews, when founded Israel, they tried to educate the Arabs to be Israelis. They tried to make Arabs accept Israel and not be loyal to the Muslim and Arab world ambitions, but rather to be Israeli loyal citizens and have equal rights and equal duties. So we can coexist and live together as one people under the state, Jewish state, democratic state of Israel. That's what we dream. That's what we want. So I, in my institution or in my NGO, when I returned from my studies in United States in Las Vegas, Nevada, yes, I studied. I didn't gamble. So actually, until today, I don't know how to gamble, by the way. And I lived in Las Vegas 4 years. So I returned from my studies in Las Vegas, and my main purpose was to, based on my experience as IDF paratrooper officer, I am today a major in reserve, is to help my people based on this experience, because it's a melting, IDF is a melting pot of the Israeli society. And I know what IDF gave me and gave and contributed to my personality as it is today, and how it gave me a better, actually, a qualifications to become leader in this society and manage to coexist and call for a people for coexistence and understanding between each others. And so I came back and I found this NGO with the pre-military program for Christian and Jews and teaching Aramaic and leading my people to better integration within the state of Israel.
Shadi, so let's take a pause for a second, because I think that there's a couple things that might not be clear to listeners of the show. But before I ask you my question, you are so cool. I love listening to you. I learn something new every time I talk to you, and you get me so excited, because there's just such a, there's a such a spirit of patriotism, and it really inspires me. So I just wanted to say that, but I wanted to ask you if you could give a little explanation to people about different populations and either their obligations to serve or their cultures to serve, if you could go through that, because there are a lot of different types of people. Even today, I had a listener reach out to me and ask me about the Orthodox community and their relationship with the IDF. They wanted to understand which Orthodox Jews enter the IDF and which not. And then there are the Druzim that serve, and then there are Arab Israelis that don't. So if you could take us through all of these different communities that we have here in Israel and describe their relationship with the army, I think it could be really interesting to people that don't know.
Okay, so Israel is actually built up of different minorities and different national identities in this region that are historically belong to that to this area of Middle East. The majority of Israel, about let's say 78% or 76%, let's be more accurate, are Jews. We have then Muslim Arabs, which is about, this is include Bedouins, okay, which is Arab Muslims. They contain about, let's say, 16, let's say 18%, around 18% of the population. And another, let's say 6%, are a mix of different national groups. One of them are Druze, one of them are the Circassians, which is Caucasian Muslims, and another one are the Christians. And the Christians, like us, like me, are 2% of the population, counting 181,000 Christians, in native indigenous Christians to the land. And based on that ones, I would say that the Christians are not obligated to serve in the IDF. They can volunteer according to their will, and every youth that reach 18 years old can say, I want to serve in the IDF or police forces or national service. And we have today a rate of 30% from the Christian minority, which also divided into subgroups. One of them, as I told you, the Syriac Maronite Church that I belong to, which count 10,000 people, mainly in Upper Galilee, close to the Lebanese-Israeli border. And we have about among this community, as I said, 30% of service voluntarily. Now, about the Druze, which is also counting 1.9, almost 2% like us. They have an obligation to serve, it's compulsory, and they serve, and they have a rate of 82% of service among male. Women are not serving because in their culture they are not allowed to serve. They are more a conservative people, so women can maybe do a civil service. And we have increasing numbers of them doing a civil service. Among the Arabs, which is a Muslim, oh, another group is Circassians. It's also compulsory for them to serve. And they are also serving. It's very little minority, about 4,500 totally in Israel, maximum. And they their youth are serving. And again, the same thing with their female, they don't serve because they are also, as a Muslim, Sunnis, they are more conservative, so they don't serve. Now, the Muslim Arabs, which is the majority of the population, second largest group, are not serving. It's also not obligatory, not compulsory, and they can volunteer in the IDF, and they serve in Also, let's say not a large number, because compared to the quantity of the population, we see about, let's say, 2% service in the IDF. We can see like 1,200 or 300 Muslim Arabs serving in the IDF too, in a voluntary basis. So this is the Jews, of course, they all serve in the IDF as a compulsory. And hopefully, I believe the future should be different. I believe that every Israeli should serve in compulsory. It doesn't matter what background you come from. And you should also receive your rights equally based on equality in duties as well, not only in rights. This is the way to live as a one people under Israeli Jewish democratic state. And that's upon the leaders of Israel to decide. I know the sensitivity of this, because many Muslims won't serve in the IDF. They don't want to serve. They want to be, as I said, loyal to their Arab and brotherhood identity, or Islamic brotherhood identity, and feel that Israel is not their state. And that's what creates a problem on actually implementing this on equal duties and equal rights as it is, because you cannot sometimes, when you have a country that is threatened by their enemies surrounding them, to annihilate them, to annihilate its people and the Jewish people here, and you don't want to give like to share the burden of this service, then many Jews feel, okay, we sacrificing our youth to defend this country, and others want only to take rights without doing anything. And with all that as well, go and speak badly about the country. So where is the equality here in duties and rights? So many, even those who serve, not even Jews, say, why I should serve? If these people get everything without serving, like the Arabs get everything, the Muslims, without serving in the IDF, why I should serve? I don't want to serve, and I want to get also everything. So this is how things start being problematic and ruined based on civilian positive citizenship. And I hope the future will educate those people too, that they have a responsibility. And if they don't want to fight in the IDF or defend the country, at least let them contribute in a civil service to the country. And so we can at least know that we have equal duties and equal rights for everybody.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
I'm wondering about Jews who make Aliyah, whether they have, like you, Shanna, whether or not they have to serve. And Shanna, the second question would be for you, whether you did serve. And if you did, I'd like to hear briefly about that.
Well, Jews who make Aliyah, Shanna can tell you about it, but I can tell you that what I know, that if a Jew come, like a female came and she's like older than 19, if I'm not mistaken, or so. I'm not sure, Shanna, about the age. Huh?
I just looked this up actually a few days ago. So the age is actually 24.
24.
But I don't know about the difference between, I don't remember the male and female, but I remember 24 being about the age that, the way that it works from my understanding is if you come, I think between 22 and 24, it is suggested that you at least do a civil service, that you at least do, as we call it, Shirut Leumi, right?
Mm-hmm.
National service. But I don't think that it's in force. And I arrived when I was 24, turning 25, and I did not have to serve. I actually wanted to serve when I was in high school in the IDF. And my parents said, Hell no. You are not leaving the country. You are going to have a get you are going to get an education, and you will stay with us. So I did not serve, but it is something that definitely weighs on me. And I recently wrote an article about this in the Jerusalem Post magazine about how so many of the immigrants that come here in my community have made themselves really available to help volunteer in the last few weeks since this war effort has started. Because what's happening is there becomes people feel guilty that they're not serving. They feel guilty that their neighbors are in Miluim, also known as reserve duty in English, and they're not. So there's a lot of volunteering. I personally have not done more volunteering than other than helping the community acclimate. So I'm a really big part of the Olim community in Tel Aviv of absorbing people and helping people get comfortable here in Israel. And I also, of course, am doing tons and tons of writing and news coverage about Israel. But it's a really good question, and it's something that I think about a lot. And I know I just had an interview with somebody who is 29 and wrote a letter to our Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu asking and actually begging to get into the army, because I think after 24, you have to actually petition to get into the army if you want to enter the army, and especially if you want to be in combat. You have to sort of force your way in, because once you're past a certain age, you're not as relevant.
Yeah. So for your second question about my service, when I become 18 years old, I joined the paratroopers, and I was also become an officer in the IDF. So it was 1995 and mid 1995, and then I, as an officer, actually, I was in charge for a younger Jewish soldiers, youth. I was in charge for them in South Lebanon. I led them in different locations. We were at that time, to remind you, we had the security zone of South Lebanon, and we were positioned there, and I was in charge for the eastern district, and the battalion that I was in charge of was the SLA battalion of Eastern District of South Lebanon. I had Jewish soldiers. I took care of them. I was in charge for them. I was able to do anything I want, and give orders to whoever I want, and lead them wherever I need. And my country trusted me. My state of Israel trusted me as a Christian to lead those Jews, and that they are in good hands with a Christian guy like me. So this is just a short example and proof for you and for everyone in this world that this state has nothing to do about what so-called apartheid, as they try to claim. Because if I am, as a Christian minority, like 2%, able to lead Jewish soldiers and their parents and the state of Israel and the leaders, allowing this Christian to lead them, this gives the answer to those people who try to claim apartheid. Apartheid, it means people are using, or like, they don't consider the other parties or nations or groups in this country, and treating them as infidels, and treating them as maybe a last or second or third or fifth class citizen, and actually dividing between them and others, and not combining them. And as a proof, I led them in the same unit, and I was in charge of them. And not only in charge for in my career in the army, I was not only in charge for male, I was in charge for female soldiers in the IDF. And this is the state of Israel, and the proof that this country actually get even way more advanced in liberalism and openness since 1995, 1996, 1997, when I served the army. Today, here in Israel, people can enjoy everything, any part of their freedom as citizens of the state. But there's only one but, which is, if you are a citizen, be loyal to your state. If you are not loyal to your state, then don't expect this. If you spy against your state, and if you act against the state, like today, and side with ISIS, Hamas, and with others, and try to weaken the state during a war time, it's a war. It's declared war in Israel. Then you are a spy and you are a traitor. And the punishment for being a spy or traitor, it's not only in Israel allowed, it's allowed and it must be done in all other countries. I don't see the U.S. government will allow any Russian spy to exist in the United States. I wouldn't see even not even Russian spy. What to go? Why not? Why to go to Russian, which is an enemy considered today to U.S. Let's go to even friends like countries who have an alliance with Israel. United States will not even allow anyone who comes from a state that is friends of the United States to spy in the U.S. and be spy, or even a citizen spying to another country that is friends of the United States. So obviously here we are in a stage of war, and Israel will not allow anyone spying on its soil for any other enemies and not even friends as well. So this is the only but that I have in this country, and that's how it should be working like all other countries. And other things, we enjoy freedom of worship. We enjoy, as a Christians, as a Muslims, as a Druze, as Circassians, as any other rights. Even the Arabs are enjoying cultural heritage, historical rights that the state allows them, education curriculum specifically for them to teach Arabic language, to teach Islamic history, to teach anything they need in order to preserve their identity. It's a lot of rights that even in other Western countries, this is not giving to minorities. If you think about the United States, and you have like a big Muslim maybe population today, I don't know, 2 million, whatever it is. And they will start asking, I want to teach the Arabic language and Islamic history and not the American history and other things, just our history and be there. What would you think as American? These guys don't want to be Americans. They came from countries that they ran away from butchering of their leaders, and they ran away from failure Islamic regimes in their countries, and now they coming to United States or Europe, and they want to impose this same culture, same identity, same teachings that they ran away from it, which was failure, made their countries failure country because of extremism, and they want to impose it in your own countries. This is insane. This is ridiculous. You need to adopt the culture and language and identity and be proud of this country that is allowing you everything you need to live respectfully in it, enjoying freedom, enjoying liberty. That's Israel to the Arabs, my friends, today. The Arabs in Israel are the only Arabs in the whole Middle East that enjoying all these rights. While if they are where in Syria, they would be speaking about Assad or against Assad, they will be beheaded. If they were in Jordan, it's the same thing. If they're speaking against King Abdullah or any other king in Morocco or in Saudi Arabia, or they will be beheaded and punished very, very harshly. So this is the democracy of Israel, my friend, that I'm proud of. And that's why it's worth to be defended. It's worth to be defended. And that's why I am committed to defend this country and call and encourage my other Christian fellows and brothers and sisters in Israel to join the IDF and in the entire world to support the IDF and support Israel at the same time as the only justice state in this region.
Wow, I think we're all, I could be standing on the top of a mountain right now at how high I feel. I wanna open up, I have a question for myself, but I wanna open up the floor to Marianne or Jim, if you have questions that you'd like to bring to Shadi.
Oh, Marianne sent two in the chat. I think you should ask those first.
Oh, thank you.
Let me see.
Okay, great. So Marianne says, do you see a difference in how Christians are being treated? Do you see these resent developments tied into end time prophecies? Recent. So Marianne wants to know if you see the recent events that have been happening here in Israel and at Gaza to be a prophecy for the end of days.
Okay. The first question about the difference on how Christians are being treated, I don't see any difference with any other citizens of Israel that they treating us a different way. We are treated like any other Israeli citizens. We have one law under the state of Israel, one court under the state of Israel, one government, and the laws are actually imposed on any citizen, and everyone should follow these same laws equally. And if they, for example, decide to compensate citizens in this war in a specific region with this amount of money monthly, for example, it applies for all citizens without difference between gender, religion, national identity, and whatsoever. It's not this issue about Christian. If you are a Christian in the Israeli society, you might have extra rights by being a minority and being a spoiling you as a minority and maybe defending you in a better way. Now, if we hear about some extremist treating Christians not in a good way, and let me be clear, like spitting on priests in Jerusalem, this is not the state of Israel and the government of Israel. It's a behavior of a few extremists that are doing so, and Jews are opposing those guys. And government actually sent police forces and implanted cameras to catch those extremists and punish them. While other Arab countries, we see people attacking Christians and they go along without any punishment. We saw people in Arab countries burning churches and killing Christians and massacring Christians in Iraq and Syria and others, and no punishment. We saw that under the PLO, the Palestinian Authority in Bethlehem, and no punishment for those Arabs who attacked Christians. And Christians are oppressed there and don't talk about their oppression because they're afraid of being attacked and beheaded by those neighbors. That's what are those neighbors, Palestinian Muslim neighbors. This is the reality, my friend. Here in Israel, if somebody do wrong for you, you can actually have a police defending you. You have a court defending you. You have a law defending you. That's the reality for Christian, and that's the reality of every Israeli citizen. And about the second question for you, do you see recent development tied to end of time prophecies? Well, I will leave it for everyone in his own belief. I don't think we are at the end time. We are I am actually positive that the end of this war, we will have peace after defeating Hamas and Hezbollah and all this Iranian axis of evil, of Islamic Shia axis, because many Arab countries, once they see that Israel is winning this war, will join the powerful country and the peaceful axis in this region with other Arab countries and states that wanted to do the peace and started doing peace with Israel and Abraham Accords. And we almost had a peace with Saudi Arabia. And if they see that Israel won that war, the peace will even actually expand more to more countries and include those that we are in war with today, like Lebanon and like others, will take a step and understand that this evil was defeated and we better actually create good relations with our neighbor and let's start living and not fighting.
I am so hoping that that will happen. I think that this region absolutely needs to be cleared of people that want to take us back thousands of years. I mean, thousands of years. Today, I sat in on a small press conference of the family members of hostages that are in Gaza. And they all said a very similar thing to me, which was the massacre that happened on October 7th in Israel was so ancient in its way of violence, the way that Hamas came in. They did not just shoot people down. They heinously murdered people. And the stories that I heard today just sent me home with my blood boiling. And we absolutely, as a region, cannot afford to go backwards. We can't afford to go backwards. There are too many incredible things that are happening in this region. Peace deals between Israel and Arab nations that nobody ever expected to see. Nobody ever thought that they would see a peace deal between Saudi Arabia and Israel. And I just wrote about this. And the reason for that is because there is a lot of advancement. There's progress. There's economic prosperity to be had and to be taken advantage of. And so one thing that you said to me, Shadi, in the past, is that the idea of these Hamas, ISIS, Hezbollah extremists is to create a place where intelligent, forward-minded people will not want to stay and that they won't want to raise their kids in this region because the smart people will find visas to get out and to go have work and safety in other places. And one thing that I really respect about you, Shadi, is that you are not willing to allow those terrorists to create to do a downturn on our society. And we're all on the rise. We're all on the way up. And we need to continue because prosperity is something that everybody can join in. And when one nation is prospering, it's much easier for another nation right next door to prosper. So I really like that. I want to take...
I want just to give a like specific example on what you said now about people that are intelligent and smart and educated will leave. I would say we had this actually a picture where Lebanese Christians and Maronites like me, these Aramaic people who were very well educated and very well westernized, and they become you know, the entrepreneurs on of their country and very well successful in the world, they left Lebanon. And you have in Lebanon, of our people, of these Christian people, only 1 million left, while 11 to 12 million live overseas today in diaspora. Why they live in diaspora? Why they leave their country, their homeland? Because they don't want to give them peace. Because those Islamic fanatic Iranian Shia people, and with the allies of them before in the Arab world, tried to destroy Lebanon, and since then they preserving Lebanon as a failure state in order to prevent those, at least, you know what, not 11 million to come back to Lebanon, at least to let 1 million come back to Lebanon. Because once these guys, this educated guys with money, will come and invest back in Lebanon, they will become the majority again, and Lebanon will start being prosperous, and they will lose control of Lebanon. So they prefer Lebanon to keep it, to stay failure country with wars, and nobody want to come live in wars and with tension, and people want to build future, people who love life and want to live, they prefer to go and migrate and stay in Europe or United States or in Canada or in Australia or in Brazil or wherever it is. And that's what's happening for the Christians in the Middle East and in Lebanon. And they are doing the same for the Jews. The Jews are educated people, are very well sophisticated people. They are westernized. They are democratic people, and they are trying to make Israel mess and failure state with interior tensions, with always stay in wars with the surrounding, with those Shia groups, so, and include the Arabs inside Israel, in order to make Jews get sick of this situation. And many educated people of them will leave the country, and at the end, this country will lose the good people and the good leaders, and we might have another failure state like in Lebanon. And I want to prevent this from happening. I want to have the Jews be aware of this plan, because nobody is thinking strategically, unfortunately, on what they did for the Maronites. They think they are doing this only for Jews. No, they did that for the Christians in Lebanon, those Lebanese Maronites, the founders of Lebanon. And now they are overseas, abroad, and many of their youth want to leave the country. They don't want war with Israel. They prefer to live in peace. And they wanted peace before. And the Arab world didn't actually support them on this process. They were supposed to have the first peace agreement with Israel. It was Lebanon. But they fought the Lebanese, and specifically the Christians, the rulers of Lebanon back then, in order to prevent them from signing a peace agreement with Israel and with the Jews. And that's the end of Lebanon. That's what we see today. Controlled by Iran and by Islamic fanatic group of Hezbollah, that people are oppressed and migrating and leaving their country for this evil.
Thank you so much, Shadi, for really opening our eyes. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Shana. Come to visit us here in Galilee and see our Aramaic community too. God bless.
I want to thank all of you for your interest in Israeli affairs, Israeli politics, our world politics. I also want to thank all of you who personally finance and fund the Israel Daily News Podcast with monthly contributions. You can support us with monthly contributions by going over to anchor.fm/Israel Daily News. You can contribute whatever feels good to you. Listener support is quite literally what helps me continue to do this work independently. so that I can keep doing it the way that I believe it should be done. And more than anything, I want to thank you all for your words of affirmation, which have been so nourishing to my soul during these difficult months following the outbreak of war on October 7th. To make a one-time contribution, you can head over to GoFundMe.com, search for Shanafold. You can leave us a one-time contribution for our special wartime coverage, which I take very seriously. And I also want to give people a little bit of a mental break through interviews like this. You can also show us your support by leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts. 2, you can share the show with a friend. And 3, you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at IsraelDaily.news, as well as Shanafold. My name has 2 N's in it, and I'm very sensitive about that. You can also find us on Twitter at Israel Podcast. All right, well, that is it for today's show. Subscribe to the Israel Daily News Podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you're hearing it from. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top 5 stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week that goes out on Sunday nights. And of course, there's always a personal note from me at the top with some links to any of my published works that may have come out that week. You can sign up for that at IsraelDaily.news. A big thank you goes out to our social media director, Michelle Milner. I'll send you off with an instrumental song called Day and Night by Shalom David Crane. Enjoy this piece and have a great and productive day and an excellent week.